Welcome to another episode of the Untangling Web3 podcast. Today, we have special guest Dan Sodergren with us. Dan is a futurist, TEDx speaker, and expert on AI in the workplace and the future of work. He's featured on BBC, Channel 4, and ITV, and is a leading voice in AI, digital transformation, and consumer rights. A passionate advocate for diversity in tech, Dan helps businesses and educators navigate the AI revolution. Today, we will be discussing the future of work and the fifth industrial revolution. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thanks very much for having me. Most kind.
Yeah, I saw you on, I think it was LinkedIn. I think you were talking on the BBC and I was like, okay, we've got to get this guy on the show. He's talking about very complex topics in a very easy to understand manner. And when we're talking about, you know, the future of work, most people are looking online about AI and the metaverse and all this kind of stuff. What they really care about is how does this affect me? And I think hopefully we're going to really touch on, you know, what this means for most people. And I'm really excited to have you on the show to talk about the future of work and the fifth industrial revolution.
Well, thanks very much for having me. I'm very, very lucky because, I may have helped kind of coin the phrase around the fifth industrial revolution, but it wasn't me making it. Let's put it that way. And we're all very lucky to live in this time where this amazing opportunity has happened. You know, there's never been a better time to do, almost most probably never been a better time to be alive. It is an amazing opportunity that we have. I know it's a double-edged sword and I understand there are lots of things that are bad in the world as well. But my goodness, you know, I had the joy of knowing a few people behind the scenes with the AI world, and they were predicting this kind of stuff would happen in 10 years, about 8 years ago. So this is happening quicker than they predicted. And, you know, do remember these guys are literally the people who started this stuff out. And, you know, I'm very lucky. A friend of a friend is Demis Hablis. I don't know if you know Demis, but his work, he's the guy who created Google DeepMind. Well, DeepMind, and then sold it to Google. Okay. Yeah. And so about 8 years ago, I was sitting there with a few friends and we were discussing AI stuff over many drinks and they were predicting it's really interesting to know what their real motivations were for creating this stuff. And it's a lot deeper than people might think. Yeah. And they were saying, well, because I was asking them a few questions about the future of work and they were like, well, for that thing, you've got about 10 years. And I was like, that's fascinating. Right. That changes where my life's going to go. But they got the maths wrong because of what Sam did and what other folk have done. And believe me, these people don't get maths wrong. They're not the kind of people that get maths wrong by 20%, but even they didn't see it coming. So this is why it's so exciting.
Yeah, that's a really nice intro to the topic. I think, when I hear the term fifth industrial revolution, I immediately think, okay, hang on, what were the fourth, third, second, and first? How many of those did I live through? So can we take a step back and just go through, you know, maybe what was the most recent generation? What was the fourth industrial revolution? And then how does this new phase that we're going through, as you said, coined the term the fifth industrial revolution, how does that compare to what we've just been through, supposedly?
Well, you'd have to be extremely old and very lucky to have gone through the first one first. In fact, you'd have to be some kind of freaky kind of vampire type character or Howard Gray or whatever. So fair play to you. If that is the case, if there's a picture upstairs in your attic which is continually going old, then we know what you've been doing, by the way. So fair play, you're about 600 years old. But to be, you know, silliness aside, I won't go through all of them, but you know, the first was steam, wasn't it? So, you know, the industrial revolution as we called it, and these different things. You gotta think, you know, agrarian revolutions and all these other things kind of happen as well. But technology tends to kind of underpin this moment, this triggering moment. So to answer your question around the fourth, I would say it's most probably around when computers started to happen a bit more, right? So it was computers. It wasn't necessarily automation and factory stuff. That's most probably the third. Yeah, but the fourth is really around computers. And people would argue and put into that most probably things like mobile phones or maybe even augmented reality and maybe even kind of some kind of digital stuff and online stuff more than perhaps they should be. But this is the point, isn't it? It's a discussion around it. I believe we're in the fifth industrial revolution because I believe this is fundamentally different. Yeah. But if you are as old as I am, you'll know, you'll be able to say, oh, but Dan, AI didn't just start 2 years ago. AI started, you know, can you not remember Lisa? Can you not remember? The term technically is from 1962. You know, and rightly so, right? This is not a new thing. Machine learning isn't. And we all know this stuff. We're clever folks. So we know it's been around for a long time. But a bit like with things like, I don't know, I'd say the printing press, but, you know, things like the Industrial Revolution, the first one, let's say, you had steam engine stuff. So you could have had steam engines for a while, but it's when everyone starts using them, right? That's when it becomes a revolution. And the reason why I think it's the fifth industrial revolution now is because artificial intelligence and computers being as great as they are now is fundamentally different to the systems we had before. Yeah, it's fundamentally different. It's not just it's a little bit different. It's fundamentally different. And if we don't kind of get that fundamental difference, that's okay, because you don't have to get it. And until you get it, you don't have to get it, if that makes sense. Like some people really honestly at the moment are arguing, well, we're not in the fifth industrial revolution. Okay, fine. But let's say that we are, just because it's easier. Because then we can say, actually, why is this paradigm shift happening? Well, it's happening because of the fifth industrial revolution. Now, you could say, well, it's no different to the fourth, Dan. But it is, because artificial intelligence has now got emotional intelligence. Yeah. You know, organizations are fundamentally changing because of hybrid work and a whole variety of different macroeconomic moments, which makes it a revolution. But we cannot underestimate the power of the fifth industrial revolution, because just like in different industrial revolutions, ownership of power is now changing. Yeah. So if I give you the most obvious thing here, 95% of us used to work in the fields, right? We used to work in farmer laborers, right? Then you had the industrial revolution, which changed where people worked. Yeah. So I put it to you now in the fifth industrial revolution, because it's going to change fundamentally how people work. We're going to have this new era of radical flexibility. We're going to have this new era where leaders must understand that artificial intelligence gives you a superpower. I was on the call with Reid Hoffman, the guy who made LinkedIn, a very famous investor, etc. You'll all know Reid Hoffman, I'm guessing. But I'm also very old. So sometimes I say people and they're like, who's he? He's like, you know, back in the day kind of guy, right? Part of the PayPal mafia. Anyway, point being is, he was saying that everyone now has a superpower. And it's something I've been talking about in my keynotes for a very long time. That superpower means that we're in the fifth industrial revolution. Yeah, just like in the, I don't know, the first industrial revolution, maybe, or the second or third, people owned the means of production. They tended to be people in power. And the fundamental difference was how powerful those technologies were. This one's different, because actually you and me, we now own the means of production, which is fundamental. Don't get me started on that one, but fundamentally changes everything. Changes entrepreneurship, changes how we think, changes education, changes everything. And that's why it's the fifth industrial revolution.
That's powerful. I it's hard to like determine, like you say, when we're kind of in this frontier stage where, like you say, AI has been used as a term and people have been using it for many years now. And when we're at the stage where, in my mind, maybe a revolution starts when there's a dependence on it. Like I would say 5 years ago, using AI, but much more in a data analytical sense, like it wasn't part of my day-to-day life. But now if, say, ChatGPT goes down for a day, it really affects my day-to-day. Like it affects like what I can do and what I'm capable of. You don't realize how dependent you are on these technologies until they go down. You can't use them anymore, and you realize, okay, most of the tasks I do now are automated through some kind of AI underneath the scenes. Do you think so? One thing you touched on there was that a fundamental difference between the fifth industrial revolution, say the fourth, third, second, is that it's maybe democratizing power in a way. And do you think that there's something inherent with AI, or is that going to change? Because a lot of people talk about, you know, you look at, the stock market in the US and all this kind of stuff, and how it's really centralizing companies that are AI ready and all this kind of stuff. Do you think that that dynamic you're speaking about now is kind of, I guess, intuitive or kind of fundamental to AI in itself, or will that change over time?
Wow. So you went with a big one, right? So Dan, is there a God? And if so, which one is it? All right. Thanks. It's a small subject that we could discuss.
42.
For the rest of our lives as a philosophy of thought. Thanks for making it. I'll try to make it in the next 1 minute. I'll try to do that for you. No problems. But joking aside, it's a biggie, right? So a couple of ways of answering that. So the American style of what we might call AI. Yeah, and I know that there's a lot of people discussing this way and that on this. Right, so we now use AI more than ever before, right? The percentages are pretty high. It's like doubled in the last year. So you're right, we're in this moment where we use it lots. But we've got to remember, we're still pretty early, right? Not everybody uses AI lots. When I do talks about AI, I talk to people and businesses around the world, actually. Yeah? And you know, you'll be surprised how many people haven't heard of Claude, let's say. You know, how many people don't use a different AI than ChatGPT? Yeah, I think it might be different now because of DeepSeek, but that's almost a different conversation. In fact, it answers the second point, right? And so as a whole mass of folk, we aren't in that moment where we can start thinking about AI in kind of deeper terms yet, but it's going to be another year. The other point you're talking about is the kind of style of AI. Yeah, that's the billion-dollar question, right? Like, if you're going to go for this kind of, as they, you know that this term is wrong, but, you know, the closed source versus open source. Mm. Yeah. And then you start looking at actually what were the intentions of the companies. You know, a lot of people don't realize, but I'm guessing you guys do, that Elon Musk gave Sam Altman that money to start off with, right? So, you know, eight years ago, when I was talking to Dennis, another fight, we were discussing the ethics board of around AI, right? About, you know, these people all sat around a table and said, this is the strategic plan for AI. And then Sam technically broke the rules here. He kind of went off and did his own thing. And then he's broke it even more, you'd argue, by not, you know, it's no longer not for profit. It's owned by Microsoft and it's purely for profit. So, you know, I'm not going to get on the moral stance of that, but it kind of shows you something about the power of AI, isn't it? You know, it shows you something about this whole kind of almost, without getting too geeky about this whole kind of Prometheus kind of coming down with fire, right? And giving it to human beings.
Yeah.
The compute, you know, this kind of compute power wasn't meant to be given to the average Joe. Wasn't meant to be. Yeah. But there's a massive advantage of when it is. But that advantage can change societies and change companies. Yeah. So in my book, Talk About the Fifth Industrial Revolution, I talk about not only organizational intelligence, but independent intelligence. Like, are we ready as individuals to have superpowers? You know, are you ready as individuals to become four times stronger than you were before? Yeah. Now, I don't know the answer to that, but I will tell you that independent intelligence, the ability to think for yourself, is going to become hugely important. Yeah. Emotional intelligence is going to become more important than people are comfortable with, because actually being emotionally intelligent helps you be better with AI. Yeah. That's what prompt engineering technically is.
Yeah.
It's being emotionally intelligent, right? A lot of people don't realize AI is like having an automated intern. It's the same principle. Yeah. And they all have different personalities. Like Claude has a different personality to ChatGPT. You say this to people, blows their mind. This is what I do as a job, right? It's kind of teach people the stuff. But you'd be amazed how many people use AI and then go, oh, I've used one type of AI, that's me done. Because that's what they think AI is, right? Because we have this unfortunate catch-all term, right? Now, this is not even using AI, and you could say machine learning or data analytics, all these different things. This is not even using it in a business. This is just using it in their job. Yeah. And yet they don't do the due diligence and go, actually, let's now benchmark DeepSeek compared to Claude or whatever for their particular role, right?
Yeah.
Now, this is as silly as not, if you've got the power of having different interns, it's the silly as presuming that each intern is going to be amazing at everything. But it's just ridiculous. But you'd be amazed how, you know, we literally look at AI and go, right, AI, you should know everything about everything and be able to do every job amazingly. Because it's a computer. But this is insane, because we wouldn't do that to a person. We wouldn't go to our doctor and then say, oh, mate, yeah, it's interesting what you're talking about. You just diagnosed my cancer. That's great. But what about, I'm about to sell my house. You know, can you help me with that? You just wouldn't do it, right? But we do this every day with different AIs. So one of the big things is, can you jump around, understanding that AIs are really like people and you can hire all these different folk for pennies in the pound? That changes how we use AI. It's the companies that understand that and the individuals that understand that will make so much more money and become so much more profitable. And, you know, Sam Altman talks about the first billion-dollar company already being born, but it's just one person running it. But that's most probably true, because it's one person running it, but it's 100 AIs. So it's 100 people in the company. They're the entrepreneur, right? So it's kind of cut a far too long story short, but you did ask me a massive question. That changes everything in society, not just business. It fundamentally changes what we understand and even the employee contracts and everything we have in our heads, which is why it's the fifth industrial revolution. And then the bigger question is who's going to run this world? And right now, which is different to maybe 2 weeks ago, it looks like open source will be the best way to go. I've been talking about everyone going open source and doing small language models rather than large language models for a very long time, with your own proprietary data, bringing it in-house and doing it on a server, back in the day kind of stuff, right? This is what digital transformation was all about years ago. And I was persuading people then to have websites and then persuading people to have servers. Now I'm persuading people to have AI agents inside their own businesses. It's the same principle. But because it's everything changes so quickly in AI, I don't think it was financially possible until maybe last week. Yeah. Because you can now do things literally for pennies in the pound that last week may have cost a grand. So companies, small businesses that I work with and even bigger ones, they're like, oh, we don't have the 20K budget that we'd need to do this. But now that's gone down to 2K. That changes everything. And if it goes down, and I don't think it will, but it will keep coming down because of competition. If it goes down to being, I don't know, 50 quid or something, or £100 to create your own AI agent that lives in your offline locally that does your job for you, welcome to the fifth industrial revolution, right? We don't have jobs anymore, ladies and gentlemen, or we don't have jobs as we know.
Yeah, that is, wow, we've covered an awful lot of ground there. And I think that was a masterful way to answer Alex's pretty horrible question to you there. A couple of things I want to touch on that you mentioned. Yeah, I think it's really interesting. For me, ChatGPT has almost done what Google did or the Hoover did or the Tannoy. They've become the collective. They've become the term for a broader set of things, right? That people refer to it as, and like, oh yeah, AI is ChatGPT now. So a lot of people. And I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. There's such a wealth of opportunity by looking outside of ChatGPT and looking, you know, to specialize a little bit. That's a key word, I think. There's so much value there. And yeah, you mentioned DeepSeek. That's really changed the game just, you know, in the last week, right? Because we've seen this kind of space race over the last year and a half, 2 years now, where so many companies, especially in America, are fighting to build the best model. And obviously, not most of them not open source. And I think you're completely right. The open source model way of going in the future is definitely going to catch on for exactly that reason you said, be it being able to take it in-house, to localize, to specialize, to use it yourself. And I remember I spoke to someone, you know, right at the start of the, let's say, the ChatGPT craze a couple of years ago, and they were saying, well, it's great, but why don't you download Llama and use this Llama model locally? And I was like, yeah, but it sounds like hassle. It sounds like it's going to, you know, ruin my computer. Now that's becoming much more accessible. And all those things you said, right, how you speak to it, having an AI agent that is trained on your data, because that is one of the big advantages I think you get over at ChatGPT. Everyone who uses ChatGPT is influencing the model, right? Everything they say to it is updating and building that model. And yeah, that might help it become better at general tasks, but it's not necessarily helping it specialize and get better at specific things to do. So I think that's a really, really key point you mentioned. I also just, you know, sorry, go ahead.
No. I'm just saying, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, if we looked at it slightly differently and we didn't look at, we kind of used our own intelligence and realized artificial intelligence is most probably more like us than we'd like to believe, then we'd all of us would understand. And this is what I'm saying. It's a mindset process. If you go, wait a minute, AI is like an automated intern. How would I treat an intern? Then you get rid of all the problems because you'd go, oh, I'd want the intern to learn from me. I'd want the intern to know everything that I know. I'd want the intern to read these books. I want the intern to make sure that they were in my office space. And, you know, but what you're actually doing when you go to ChatGPT, you're basically going, right, God computer, I want you to do everything now, but I also want to teach you how to become a God. And it's like, AGI, get it. And I know it's a $1 trillion opportunity, but it actually doesn't make any difference for your business because they're creating a godlike creature. Great. You know, Microsoft can spend all this money on it. Great. But actually, what you want, I'm not saying use DeepSeek. No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is use something that's just cheap and secure and whatever. And don't get me started on this. But you can take, as you know, just to talk about Llama, Hugging Face, all this other stuff. It's great because you guys are as geeky as I am. So it's brilliant. Normally, I'm talking to people that don't know very much about AI and I'm trying to infuse them and inspire them. But we can get proper geeky on this. You could now take, as you know, you can build your own rig now for like $6,000, right? Like literally for $6,000 that has an AI. That's a effing supercomputer potential for $6,000. Like it's gone from 6 million to 6,000. Like like a month, right? This is insane. And before it was 6 billion, right? So where's this going to go? Now, this changes everything. But as I say, I think the first thing we've got to do, and we've always got to remember with technology, it's human beings using it, right? So just like you were talking about, you have had a fear potentially of doing all this stuff. Yeah, it's that fear of it being too geeky or downloading. And that's why ChatGPT did so well. It was just a change of the UI, wasn't it? It was just a change of the UX. It didn't really do anything new. 3.5 wasn't brilliant, but it was the way that human beings interacted with it, which changed everything. Now, again, you know, the next jump is going to be AI agents. And the $1 billion opportunity is who can make AI agents easy to make. And that's the race. You want to know what arms race is right now? I think it's literally that. How do you do this easily? My own company is trying to do this, and we're looking into it. But there are the great things, like you can use I do a course called the AI marketing course, and I talked about this in the end of it, the future of marketing. I talked about, because I'd made it a year and a half ago, and there's something like 111 tools in there, and 31 we use in the actual in the course itself. But one of those was Dante. I don't know if you know Dante, which is the chatbot builder. Yeah, so that made that process simple. Then if you look at something like Lindy, do you guys know Lindy? If you have a look at Lindy, right? Lindy, a great company over in San Francisco, that makes making AI agents almost as easy as Dante makes making chatbots. Yeah. So again, and please, I don't own any shares in it, but please crack on and do find out all about it. My reference number is 497291. Click here, the EGM link. But you know, the race will be, and the billion opportunity is, in this fifth industrial revolution, who's going to make it easy for human beings to utilize the technology that makes a massive difference to their lives? And that's what ChatGPT did so well. But at some point, their reign will be potentially over, because someone will do it for cheaper, or someone will do it better. You know, I don't know if you've played around with Operator yet.
A little bit.
I mean, it's good, but it's not great. You know, and it could be great, but they could make it even easier. And I mean, it's a great idea that they had, and it's a brilliant way they've made it work. But yeah, I won't get too geeky about it.
There's so many things that I want to like kind of dive into, but I realize we've only got 40 minutes, so I won't. But the idea of saying what people's understanding of AI was ChatGPT, maybe some Gemini, Claude, all quite Western bias. So they all kind of had similar biases. So it wasn't, you could still have this kind of belief that, you know, they are a supercomputer, they're always right, all this kind of stuff. And then they say DeepSeek completely changed that, because it had a completely different biases, completely different influence. And one of the first things I was doing was, okay, how do say answers compare between the two, especially on like political kind of, you know, political kind of questions, and completely different. And I think a lot of people, because of that, have now started to understand that these kind of systems are very influenced by the people creating them, and they're not, you know, completely robust. They're not always true. And I think actually this has really helped to have that, you know, now very deep comparison between these systems to say they're not always right, and they are, you know, they're not perfect and they're infallible like everything is. Now to go to AI agents, that you say, it's been so, like, these chatbots are incredible, very intuitive, all this kind of stuff, but it still needs a lot of human, you know, intervention, actuation, all this. It's very much just isolated. I ask a question, it gives me some information, then I have to do something with it. And in the business world, a lot of people maybe don't intuitively understand how, you know, beneficial that is. But like you're saying now, like, to take this to the next stage and say, you kept describing these like assistants, which I think is a really good intuitive Web 2 way of helping to people and to understand what the benefits are. And now we're starting to move to this idea of AI agents where they can do everything. Well, not everything. They can replace humans completely. They don't need human in the loop. You can say this job is now this person's job. They don't need to be controlled in this one box where they give you prompts and then you copy and paste it and take it elsewhere, or, you know, do your own human thing outside of it. It can replace those jobs. So when you're talking to businesses and advising businesses on like strategies and things like this, there's the stuff you can do now, and there's the stuff that, you know, hopefully we'll be able to do in the near future, where you're saying like you can have one click AI agents that replace potentially entire roles. Like, how do you explain all the many things they can do in an hour slot or a week slot or something like that?
Well, certainly if you've got an hour, my keynotes are normally like 45 minutes. And so I tend to use metaphors and make everything as simple as possible. The BBC get me on because they always say, you're really good at explaining complicated things in a positive and an easy way, and kind of dumb things down. What they don't realize, of course, is that I am actually quite dumb. And so I actually have to dumb it down for myself. It's a simple way of doing it. I don't get all the complication stuff. I don't do the coding, all the rest. But I think one of the big things that I have to kind of put across is it's just inspiration, if that makes sense. Like, we're in this world now where it is literally just give it a go. Yeah, the world of coding and all these other kind of obstacles that you had before has kind of disappeared. It isn't completely eroded. And I could bore you with how many, and so, you know, we all could, couldn't we, with our tales of when this thing goes wrong and why it's not great at coding and, you know, what happened to Devlin and all these things that we could talk about. Mm-hmm. But the stumbling block for most people, the analogy, I suppose, is you won't be old enough to remember, but I remember a time before Google. Yeah, I remember a time where where it was actually quite complicated to get onto the internet and you had to do loads of weird stuff. And then the internet was made simple. It's the same principle now. It's just, if we can make AI simple and we can get rid of this terrible term AI, yeah, and it just becomes computers, then everything changes, right? Because it's just simple to do. Do I think that there are different stages that everyone's in? Yeah, which is why I created this thing called the AI Maturity Survey. You can have to give it a go. I'll drop the link for it. Ask you about 8 questions and it'll tell you what level you're in, whether you're 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. There are very few companies that are at the top of their games on this unless they're in the technology space. And even then, you know, they often aren't, because this was only 2 years ago, remember? You know, or even if you were doing stuff in machine learning and other things. I was running a startup, or co-founded a startup about 5 years ago called Your Flock. And we were working in HR tech and we were building our own machine learning and kind of AI thing without realizing that's what we were doing, because we were very stupid. And we tried to build our own for, like, you know, we got $300,000 or something, and maybe a bit more from other investors. And we were trying to build a small language model. I mean, just ridiculous. Yeah. But what we had is proprietary data. So we had proprietary data sets. We had a series of valuation moments, and we were trying to digitally transform culture in a company, which is a massive task to do. It's possible, though, of course, because technically in that small language model-ish that we were creating, you would say ish, and don't get my tech people started on why I've just, you know, oversimplified that whole journey. Wouldn't like that at all. But the reality is data that we've got brings it into a closed system, small language model, brings out an outcome, right? Now, that same principle can be done for your job. That same principle can be done for anything, by the way. Anything can be data-driven into a system that understands stuff a bit more and then gives you an automated outcome, or gives you an outcome. I would challenge you, though, Alex, on the idea that we take human beings out of the loop. It's one of the biggest dangers I think we've got at the moment is almost over-egging it, over-hyping this moment, right? Yes, AI agents will exist, and yes, they will exist now. It's amazing. They shouldn't do, and they will. But just like with automated interns, you wouldn't let an intern do something by itself and run the social media marketing for a company by him or herself, right? You wouldn't. Mm. You'd have a manager. It's the same principle now. Even if we get to where AI, I think ChatGPT is around about age about 16 or 17, yeah, in its abilities. Even if we get to the stage, which we're getting very soon, by the way, with the $200 plus one, it might be now 21, 22 years old. Even if it gets up to 30, you have to have a manager. There has to be a manager, right? Now, the only time I would argue against this, and I'm going to contradict myself slightly in this one, is if you look at something like customer services, looking at a particular, very particular bit, you can train the AI with your proprietary data, brand values, and all this other stuff, because you just teach it, and then it can do it en masse. And that's where the future is going to be. Yeah. So if you look at something, you guys have seen Bland, but strange name, but Bland AI, right? What this does is exactly what people think it shouldn't be able to do. Yeah. So this has emotional intelligence around an artificial intelligence model, which takes your phone calls, can answer it in a multiple of different ways, in multiple languages, yeah, with pain points inside it, brand values inside it, outcomes inside it, decision trees inside it, your data inside it, and it does it en masse for, as a subscription, like as an enterprise subscription. It's insane. That replaces your customer services. That can just, it can replace that. But I don't think it can replace it without a human being on top of it to say, actually, you've done well there. Because it's the same with anything. You can't just get rid of everybody. You can't get rid of it. So you can't just get, you know, you have to have some kind of management feedback. You have to. Life has to, right? And Alex, I have a feeling Alex is thinking this. Alex is going, yeah, but what about if you created a management AI system that understood what management is like, and if you put that over the top, you can most probably use Facebook's psychographic data to then create a kind of dominant persona that, welcome to the world of the future, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. But right now, you can do the first bit. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure I trust it to do the second, just like I wouldn't trust a 17-year-old to manage people. Yeah. However, anyone ever heard of McDonald's? You know what I mean? A $1 billion company run by teenagers, mainly. So it depends what the outcome is, isn't it? If you're flipping burgers, it's not the end of the world if it goes slightly wrong. Yeah. But if you're trying to, I mean, my favorite one is like when people talk about, well, why can't AI do my taxes? And it's like, because an hallucination in doing your taxes means you go to prison. Someone making a burger slightly differently doesn't kill anybody, which is why, of course, AI is great for marketing, because that subjective nature doesn't have catastrophic business complications. Okay, the tweet was an 8 out of 10 rather than a 10 out of 10. Nah, okay, it's not going to kill, not kill people, right? The customer service, I wouldn't say sales, but the customer service inquiry, it got a 4.5 rather than a 4.7. Welcome to the world of human beings being different, right? You know, yeah. The teacher couldn't remember everything from the second paragraph of a book that we read, Wuthering Heights, in the, you know, page 93. Do you know how good AI is at remembering stuff compared to human beings? Like, It's right now, you could put 10 books inside Claude and its memory response is better than a human being. Like, yeah. You know, so we talk about hallucinations. Hallucinations are a feature, not a bug. Okay, hallucinations show the power of the system. Yeah, but what we're trying to say is, it needs to be like a god. It can't ever be wrong. And that's silly because we're missing the power of it. What we should be saying is I need to manage the AI. Because the AI isn't, AI can compute, but humans can create. Yeah?
Yes.
Like we shouldn't be looking to AI to replace everything in a business, because we shouldn't, because the very nature of businesses should be to employ people, to create productivity and to, almost express their own individual brilliance. That should be the point of a company, right? Not just to make money. We've only got 40 minutes, so I best not rant about that. But if you really think about it, what is a job and why do you do the work you do? Maybe not us, because we're very lucky, because we're maybe entrepreneurs and maybe we don't have jobs like other folk. But even in the jobs that other folk have, if you're happy at your work and you're engaged, and again, I could talk about the engagement levels and why they're so low in a variety of different reasons for a variety of different countries. This is why the organizational intelligence in my book is important, right? We've got to start realizing if people have a superpower, and they become more productive, then we have to change the organization and we have to change as leaders of those people. Yeah, it's like, how would you lead the Avengers is not the same as how do you manage a call center? Not the same thing. It's just not. Now, are we ready as leaders to lead? Are we ready to lead ourselves? Are we ready to do the stuff? Are we ready to get enthusiastic and create goodwill and to say, let's do it, and to inspire people? Because that's the job. Or are we used to being bosses where we tell people what to do? I literally talk to companies at the moment and they don't have an AI policy. And their AI policy is literally where you can only use Copilot. And it's insane because Copilot's rubbish. Don't get me started. Why is Copilot rubbish? I mean, come on. Why? It shouldn't be rubbish. Anyway. So yeah, we've just got to be careful. We've got to remember that this revolution is more about people than it is about technology. It's just the fact that it's technology driven and technology triggered.
Today's episode is sponsored by the VeChain Foundation.
Now, we often talk about how emerging technologies like blockchain have the potential to revolutionize sustainability. And VeChain is at the forefront of this green movement with initiatives like VBetterDAO. Let's take a closer look.
Imagine tracking small actions like recycling at low cost, making them valuable assets. These verified records build a massive collective impact, benefiting people through their own actions. Sound a bit complex, but VeChain made it fun. Explore our apps at VBetter.com.
VeChain's goal is to power a new era of sustainable solutions. So if you've got an app idea or just want to earn rewards for small, sustainable actions every day, go check out vbetterdao.com to find out more. And now, back to the show.
Because whenever there's been one of these revolutions in the past, there has always been a fear of losing jobs. That comes first, right? It's going to replace me. But no, it's going to replace some of the things you do, quite likely some of the things you don't enjoy doing in your job or in your life. And then you can fill that time with other things. Like, it reminds me very much of what Naval Ravikant says, right? It's going to, in the future, we'll hopefully be living in a world where all the stuff we don't want to do is automated. And we have all our time for creative pursuits, any things that just make us happy, basically. And we'll all be on universal basic income, but that's a whole other debate to get into.
Absolutely.
I also love that you mentioned knowledge and storage capacity of AI. I think that's really maybe an overlooked capacity. I personally use things like ChatGPT more as a search engine most of the time than I do as, to automate work, for example, because it has access to all that data. It has it all there and it gives it to you much more efficiently than trying to Google it yourself. So I just use it as a different interface now to all that information on the internet, which I think is a massively overlooked thing. And company history and how you keep the knowledge of a company for alive, for example, in a private use case is a really interesting one, I think, because, you have people come and go from a company, it's all in their heads. But if you have an AI, it's not going to come and go, it's going to stay with the company, which is a really nice use case.
And this fundamentally changes almost fundamentally changes the employee contract. This is what I talk about in my book. I talk about data. I can get very geeky about data stuff. But if you really think about it, and you're putting all your emails onto a work computer and you're doing all this stuff, okay, this is where it becomes fascinating about not having an AI policy, but also the HR implications of this and actually the employee contract implications, right? If you're using, and this scares people when I say this, when I say it to a big crowd, you can actually hear them gasp when I say it. You're using something like a free version of ChatGPT, yeah? Whose fault's that? Now, is it the company's fault for not paying for your subscription, which I would argue it is, yeah? Do you remember back in the day when people talk about, you'll be too young, but you know, these little mobile phoney things, and you had an iPhone, you couldn't take it into work. You had to have a BlackBerry. You had to have a BlackBerry because the CTO at the time was like, oh my God, it's a cybersecurity risk. You can't have. This is what they used to be called, literally bring your own device to work, right? It was a whole thing. Honestly, hilarious movement, right? Until basically we all realized it was and BlackBerry crashed. And rightly so, because BlackBerry's weren't great. But that's a different thing, right? But BlackBerry's are really good at been going on to this intranet thing that you had, yeah, and the mind thing, and they refused to let, you couldn't have an iPhone in your, as a work computer, work thing. Hilarious. But then think about it again. Were you allowed to bring in your own laptop? I can remember when people gave you a desktop and that's all you could use. You couldn't even use a laptop or take the laptop out of the office, okay? Again, same principle, right? Now, think of it now. It's bring your own AI to work. It's not just bring your own device, yeah? But it's even worse because you're using an AI which is open, potentially, and then everything can be seen, potentially. I'm not saying it does this, but read the terms and conditions, kids. You know, if you're not buying a product on the internet, you are the product. They are going to data mine you. But you're using sensitive company information to do so. You're letting everything in, right? Now, that's a worry. Then you've got this whole thing about, and your point's a really brilliant one, and something that I talked about it for like 20 years. This is the digital transformation piece. I used to go into companies and say, this is digital transformation. And they all had intranets, right? But people didn't use the intranets. I'm not going to name names, and I'm not going to say products, and I'm not going to do all the rest of it. But there are things that exist. Now, this next jump, we're going to start using those a lot more. But we're not going to use them because the AI is. Yeah. So you're going to have your own AI system inside your intranet, for want of a better word. Yeah. Which looks at, and by the way, we could do this now. It's what your flock was looking to try to do. But you could read, you know, what if you had, everything's a data point, right? So you've got all your emails. You've got your Slack stuff. Whatever, we can just talk about employee engagement levels. We can just talk about just internal stuff, internal comms stuff. Do a lot of work with internal comms. And, you know, you look at the data that internal comms could use to hyper-personalize all of its information. It isn't possible to do it unless you use AI. But if you use AI, it changes everything because you can change a company culture. Because I can say to Alex, you know, literally just ping him a quick stat. Say, hey, Alex, are you okay? How the hell did I know that Alex might not have been okay? Like, you can say, well, that's because you're a good manager and that's because you're a good boss and that's because everyone works in the office. Well, what happens if everyone doesn't work in the office? Yeah, and then you can say, well, because you micromanage Alex. Well, Alex hates being micromanaged. Yeah, so how the hell did I know? Well, because you read every email. What, you want me to read every email, keep it in my head, and read every Slack communication, keep it in my head, and align it to the brand values of the company and the interplay of the dynamics between the team? Like, this is insane. Yeah. But it's what AI does, right? It's just what AI can do. And that's why it's so exciting. AI has a superpower ability that human beings could not do. And you wouldn't want them to do, by the way, because you wouldn't want a human being to make the decisions about Alex in that respect.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't, because you couldn't trust them, because I might wake up and I'm a bit grumpy. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, because human beings are human beings. We're emotional creatures. But you could teach your AI to do all this kind of background managing of a hybrid and remote work team and be much more productive and have a great company culture. You know, I mean, I'm talking to massive companies about this, about how do you use the data that they've got? People aren't using data, right? Look at the data that you've got. I can't give the name of the company because NDAs, but you know, if you knew when people were entering an office and when they were leaving, if you worked in that kind of facilities management kind of world, you have a load more data than you think you have. Mm-hmm. Load more, right? Because you've got all the swipe in and swipe outs. But not only that, you've got what did they eat? And then you've got, you know, when was the lighting on? You've got loads, right? So then how do you create a customer experience which is richer? You only do it based on dynamics. You only can do it based on data. You cannot have a CEO that can make that decision. You cannot, because it's not possible, because it's too hyper-personalized. It is almost a godlike capacity to do this. Now, you take this into something like marketing and you get into the extremely exciting world of marketing without marketing. You get into the bit where you can intercept and do predictive analysis and intercept somebody when they're on the customer journey and how. Yeah. You do it in customer services and you can see how you can get repeat customers and how you can wind it all in. You don't need to be a big company to do this because you've got AI. Now you can see now why this fundamentally changes every role. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think you can only do that if you realize that you'd have to have a specialized AI for each bit. Yeah. The irony, of course, for SaaS companies, as software as a service companies, is they might not exist soon because we've kind of skipped ahead. We've kind of gone, actually, my AI, if I train it well enough, does this brilliantly. I don't need your system, which you've kind of hooked me into getting, and then I bring my data in. Because I might just keep all the data. And this is the bit that people might not get. The reason why there is trillions of dollars going into AI is because of this. It's going to replace the software as a service model, you know. And then potentially it then has the chance to then replace, you know, and I hate to say it, but, you know, people as a service model. The biggest cost is people in the company, right?
Mm-hmm.
For most companies, right? And then you suddenly get to this lovely world where you're like, okay, why don't we have a load of people who really love what they do and have them manage two or three AIs to do that four times better than somebody else who doesn't really like their job. You know, and it's that jump. And I think we've got to be careful in society because as we take this jump, just like we know the Industrial Revolution, there are negative sides of this as well. And so I'm just going to very quickly tell you off. Sorry, Jack. If you use, because you've got to think about the environmental impact of these things as well, right? Sure. And this is something we don't know because we didn't know, right? We didn't know this, right? It's the exact same with something like prompt engineering. If you don't get very good at prompt engineering, you use AI in a very bad way and it's terrible for the environment. This is the same as having a piece of paper and just scribbling out and then throwing a piece of paper, scribbling out, throwing paper. And that, you know what I mean? You might as well. But the implications of it are massive, right? And the same principle, if you're using AI, you know, using a supercomputer to replace Google search, the environmental implications of that are huge. Mm. They're just huge, yeah. But we just don't see it. So we don't care. We're just like, well, fair enough. Just like if you think in the Industrial Revolution, they didn't know that pumping toxins into a river was going to be bad. They were just like, progress. Progress at any cost. Right? We're doing stuff. We've made more shoes than ever. Hooray. The fish are there. Yeah, but I made money. I like money. I'm gonna make a railway. That's what we did, right? We're now in the same principle, though, and we should know this, right? We're now in the principle where energy concerns could be a big driver, which is why it's so exciting why DeepSeek exists, not just because it's cheaper, because it's better for the environment too, because it doesn't use so much compute. You know, we're literally using a supercomputer to write a tweet. I mean, come on, people. Or even worse, asking it because we can't be bothered to go on the internet. I mean, come on, that should be banned. Using it as a Google search should be banned. You know, so again, this is the thing, isn't it? You know, are we really using AI in the right way? And it's not telling anyone off about this. It's just we've all got to be a bit more conscious of this superpower we've been given. And if we're using it just to do stuff, well, got to be careful with words. Should you use it to do stuff that you, I mean, basically get 10 tweets rather than one. You know what I mean? Like, don't just ask it for one thing. You know, just get it to do a thing because that's a good thing to do. And then maybe just start looking at using, you know, don't just use ChatGPT because things like DeepSeek are better for the environment as well, you know, as well as costing us. And it'll be interesting to see. I did a knowledge transfer partnership on this years and years ago about, was digital marketing better for the environment than things like flyers? That's how old I am. We actually had flyers and we gave people pieces of paper to persuade them to do stuff in our business. Amazing, right? Pre-digital world. So what was better? Was it better? And that, but believe me, at the time, people argued this. It was the websites were bad for the environment, okay? Because they used electricity. And Google was bad for the environment because it used electricity. And pay-per-click was bad for the environment because it used electricity. Okay? Mm-hmm. So we're going to have this same argument again. And I'm not saying there's a right and wrong to this yet because I don't think we absolutely know. But I would urge everybody to use AI in their business and for their role, but really learn prompt engineering first. Learn how to get the most out of it each time you use it. And then potentially have a bit of a think about your own use of what you do. If you really are just doing it, you know, replacing Google search, I would argue maybe not because of the hallucination points in this as well.
Yeah.
Google, I mean, you can really argue about what is truth and does Google ever tell you the truth, but I mean, we can't get into that now.
I'm glad you brought up something like the downsides of this. And I think we are definitely going to see a future where everything's value versus impact, right? And you see the most AI companies, I guess, that are private and profitable, or trying to be profitable anyway, not profitable, do rate limits and say you've got so many queries a day and things like that. So make sure that, they count. And I guess businesses, as they start to like implement these as part of their strategies, will also say, well, you know, Bob, you've only got 10 queries today because last week you used a million and you've, you know, killed our electricity usage for the year or whatever. But one of the other things that I see that you've talked about on like the potential negatives of this stuff is, what if they're trained for bad purposes, whatever we define as bad? I saw you talked a lot about cyberspace riots. So do you think that this is a big thing we're seeing, like impersonating humans, spam, phishing, taking it to the next level? Do you think that most leaders actually understand how AI-driven attacks like could really impact their business and not what's really coming and already exists?
No, not even slightly. You know, I did a whole talk on this, and cybersecurity, this is one of the reasons why cybersecurity is going to be a huge industry, right? Because of this very thing. AI allows you to do so much more from a negative side with cybersecurity. I mean, it's breathtaking, okay? But if you kind of go for the non-geeky side of stuff, and you go for more the human side of, like, you know, psychographic phishing, yeah? Like, the amount of data I now have on you is you know, I can make you believe that I know you pretty quickly, right? So what this means is the cyber attacks, you've got to be careful with words, I suppose, but let's just call them cyber attacks. Malicious, let's just call them cyber attacks, it's easy. But the phishing stuff will happen to much smaller employees, much lower down the food chain, so to speak, right? So we've already seen that, you know, companies have lost billions of dollars because an AI pretended to be the CFO on a Zoom call, because you can do that. Like, you can clone my face and my voice now from the last 30 minutes. Anyone can now pretend to be me and do it to around about 87% probability. Okay. So if you've got voice recognition on your phone for your bank, take it off. For sake, take it off. Yeah. Don't believe any WhatsApp call that you get. Yeah. But just, we're now in a post-truth world. You know, just be, have your guard up, I'm afraid. This is a different world we're in. We're not in Kansas anymore. And the whole world changed. Yeah. Now, does this mean that the good guys don't also get the good side of it? No. Cybersecurity is made much better because of AI. It is both sword and shield. Yeah, definitely. But individually, are leaders and bosses aware enough of how much the dangers are out there? No. I don't think individuals are yet. You know, I've had to tell my parents that even if I phone them and say things, we should have some kind of password or a safe word, because it doesn't mean it's going to be me. You know, but I bet most bosses and most HR people haven't said that to their employees.
Yeah.
But we all know, of course, if you get the email from the African prince, you know what I mean? We all know that's nonsense, right? Yeah. But the latest version of that is getting text messages that sound like they come from your boss. Well, what happens if you get a phone call that sounds like it comes from your boss? And because they can use something like Bland, you literally wouldn't be able to tell that it wasn't them on the phone.
Yeah.
And then the next level is, what happens in Zoom calls if someone hacks into your Zoom calls? And of course, you wouldn't know they'd hacked into Zoom. You'd never know. And by the way, a lot of this time, it might just be an employee that had been fired. Yeah. And then, you know, or if they're really clever, and by the way, I think they are this clever, they'd implant an employee into your system way before you knew about it, right? You'd go and get a job at that place, because this is the con. This is what you do, right? And this is when you get into this kind of, you know, Netflix kind of special world that we might be getting into quite soon. But I think we've got to be aware of it. So this is why cybersecurity is one of the most exciting things you can do on both sides of the equation. But yeah, to answer your question, Alex, I don't think leaders know this enough. But why would they? Because they're not massive geeks, right? They're running businesses. They've had stuff to do. But they've all got, I mean, one of the biggest things for the whole of this thing is training. You know, leaders have got to change. They've got to get trained up just with the knowledge base. Then you've got your, you know, most people don't even have an AI policy. That's pretty nuts, let alone inspiring your people to do it. You know, there's great research out there at the moment that a lot of this revolution's kind of ground up. So a lot of people are using AI, but this is what I talk about in my book. And the first chapter is all about the secret cyborg, you know, because loads of bosses or leaders don't know that their people are using AI, or don't even know what type of AI they're using. And a lot of some people are even lying about it. You know, do you use AI? No, I've never used it. No, they do it every day, right? Do it every minute.
Yeah.
But then the other thing to think about is, what are the incentives for you in your business? And this links into the whole thing about employee contracts. I mean, you can get really kind of geeky about it, but think about it. There's no incentives in place for sharing best practice. around AI use. If you create a great prompt, why are you going to tell Billy? Why are you going to tell Sarah? You're not going to tell anyone. You might do. You might go, that's an amazing prompt. Oh my God, I'm 20% more productive now using that. Heck, I'm going to tell them all about it. But what happens if your CTO goes, well, you can't use that SaaS product because that hasn't been ordained and that hasn't been okayed and it's not Copilot. So you go, okay, no problem. I'm not going to use that. You just go to a different computer. You use it. You come back. You put it into the drive. You did the thing. Push it. Human beings. Well, we're literally made of water and we act like water. We will find the quickest and easiest way to do stuff. That's why we're so great as a species. But yeah, this is the other thing about where does AI get this kind of capacity from, right? It comes from us, right? We did make it, so it comes from us. It sounds like us and does us. So again, the same principle is, and it's whether it can reinforce learn itself, but that's a deeper conversation. For us as business owners, though, or for leaders of businesses, we've got to train ourselves and get our brains right and change our mindset. We've got to have an open mindset to this stuff. We've got to be okay with experimenting. We've got to be okay with failure. We've got to be okay with all these different things. And then we've got to be really okay with our employees having a bit more power than they used to have because they've now got this superpower because of artificial intelligence. We cannot just go, oh, well, just don't use AI then, because every human being will, because it makes life easier.
That is a really, I think that's a nice bow to put on this, because we had a couple of sobering points there. But to end it on a very optimistic note, I think is the right way. You mentioned that the quality of scams will increase and how people are attacked. 100% agree with that. The social engineering is so much more sophisticated now when you can mimic people. So I think that's I'm really glad you brought that one up. Thank you so much, Dan. It's been a wonderful conversation. I've learned a lot. I have to now think about my usage of ChatGPT in a slightly more eco-friendly way. I wish probably I hadn't admitted to that, but it's out there now. So yeah, thank you for humbling me on that one. And Dan, we'll definitely put a link to your AI maturity survey in the description. So anyone listening at home who wants to take that and see where they are on the survey, please check the description, go to the link and you can fill that one out. Dan, thank you again so much for being on the show. It's been a massive pleasure. And to everyone listening at home, thank you for listening. And you can join us next week to untangle a little more Web3.
Thanks very much, gentlemen, for having me. If you want to find me on LinkedIn, that's probably the easiest way. And it is me. It is not an AI. So it is me. It's a real me. So that's just Dan Sodergren. So that's D-A-N and then S-O-D-E-R-G-R-E-N. However, if you go to dansodergren.com and you fill out your details, that will be an AI that triages all my leads into a different system to my different agents. Isn't that mad? You know how long it took me to build that? It took 2 hours to build a triaging system for my website, using Zapier and about 3 other things. Mental, isn't it? It's amazing. Welcome to the 5th Industrial Revolution, gentlemen. Thanks very much for having me on.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Untangling Web3.
Don't forget to send us your thoughts, questions, and comments on social media. And be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast provider to catch the next episode. See you next time to untangle a little bit more of Web3.
The views we express here are our own and do not reflect the views of our employers.